Good afternoon and welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist, your weekly radio connection to bicycles and cycling, as well as fitness and other related topics. The Outspoken Cyclist is a radio show produced by cyclists for cyclists. And now here's your host, the Outspoken Cyclist herself, Diane Lees.
Welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees along with Tim McKenna, and we are ready to bring you another great episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. Hey, Tim.
Hi, Diane.
Hey, we had sunshine and temperatures reaching into the 30s. Do you think we're over the big hump?
I think we're over the big hump, yes.
Really?
Absolutely. I'm very positive.
We'll just see about
until
that.
Until St. Patrick's Day, we're not over the hump.
Well, that's true.
No, wait, until opening day. It is Cleveland.
Oh, wait, until Memorial Day. I know. We're just going to keep on going. Well, we also have had our glitches this week. In fact, we are recording this in the dark because we have no electricity in the John Carroll studios. We had to rig this up for you. So we're going to move on and talk a little bit about Radiothon. What?
Well, we'll talk about Radiothon, but if there's anybody out there from Kohler Generators, please send us one now.
Please. So tonight and tomorrow, we'll wrap up Radiothon 2014. We'll be keeping the online database open until Tuesday at noon. Listeners have been pledging their support all week. We thank them profusely for it. There have been some awesome pledges, even from out of the country, for the Outspoken Cyclist. It's just wonderful. There is still plenty of time to get your pledge in for this year's Thrive and Survive Radiothon 2014. As you know, we only come to you once a year and request your support for WJCU and all that our station does to bring independent and original music, talk, and community shows to the airwaves. Tim, Greg, and I are all volunteers, and we all love bringing you the best in interviews, book reviews, news, and everything else that pertains to cycling. Please consider pledging your support. Any amount is appreciated. Log on to WJCU.org and click the Pledge Online button at the top of the screen, or you can call us at 216-397-4438, and you'll get a real-life person, maybe even Tim or me, and we'll take your call. So we're going to move on with the show. Everyone seems to be tired of winter. So how about going on an adventure? You like that idea?
I love adventures.
Yeah, well, even if it's just in your mind, we're going to take you on an adventure today. This week, we're going to explore an adventure travel show in New York City, probably one of the largest in the country, if not the largest, a cycling tour company in Holland, where we know cycling is, like, way better than almost any other form of transportation, and a set of new trail maps for the Ohio Erie Trail, which there are four maps. They're wonderful. First up is Michael Carroll. Michael is the New York Times Director of Travel Advertising. So he focuses specifically on getting travel advertising for the New York Times. And I assume that's both for the newspaper and maybe they do that really nice magazine once a week on Sundays maybe. The theme for the show this year is adventure travel, which immediately caught my attention. The show begins with a travel industry conference on Friday, February 28th, and then offers the public a chance to learn about all types of travel opportunities on Saturdays and Sunday, March 1st and 2nd. And Michael will be with me in a moment. Then we will welcome the husband and wife team of Carolyn and Guy Casherall, who live and work right here in Northeast Ohio. They've just published a series of four easy-to-carry and easy-to-use maps for the Ohio to Erie Trail. The maps are divided in two sections that begin in Cleveland and work their way down to Cincinnati. The maps are durable, clear, and small enough to clip to your handlebars or slide into the map case of your handlebar bag. Guy and Carolyn also run the comprehensive website igotabike.com that includes information on touring, routes, and destinations, how-tos, and more. Tim and I will squeeze in a bit of news, and there is a lot of interesting news in the news this week. We'll take a break and remind you once again about Radiothon, and then we're going to head on over to Holland. We're going to be speaking with Peter Voss. Peter and his wife, and I think it's pronounced Lisbeth, own and operate Tulip Cycling, an apt name for a tour company in the Netherlands, don't you think?
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Tulip Cycling. I could get off on getting a whole bunch of flowers. After all, this is Valentine's Day week.
Right.
Exactly.
In case you forgot, and well, there are going to be a lot of people in trouble today if they forgot about it yesterday.
Yeah, right. Tulip Cycling offers both guided and self-guided tours in the cycling-friendly Netherlands. I'm especially interested in their use of modern technology to make their trips user-friendly and exceedingly interesting. Let's not dally. We're going to head on over to the Big Apple and welcome New York Times travel show advertising manager, Michael Carroll. Welcome to the Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for joining me.
It's great to talk to you.
So I want to talk about the New York Times travel show. Adventure travel is the theme, which makes it of great interest to me and my listeners. How big do you think the adventure travel market is?
There are a lot of estimates out there. We see it as big and growing, and the number we feel most comfortable with is about $250 billion.
Oh, that's a big number.
It is.
That's a huge number. So you decided to actually theme the New York Times travel show as an adventure travel show this year. How do you define that in terms of a travel show?
One of our themes this year, it's one of our main themes for sure. We decided to focus on adventure travel, among a couple of other themes this year, because we hear more and more from people who attend, from the media, from bloggers, that it's becoming a focus for people's travel plans. It's become big in the past few years. I think people feel more comfortable to branch out, to take a little risk during a vacation, and most importantly, I think to have an active vacation. I think we're all getting a little bit too attached to our screens and to a sedentary lifestyle. So when people learn about the options that involve getting your heart beating a little faster, they gravitate toward it.
So included in adventure are things like bicycling, skiing, even walking and hiking adventures, those kinds of things, yes?
Yes, even walking, yeah. A great brisk walk through a national park is an adventure for a lot of people. It's not sitting on a beach or maybe sitting on a ship. There are a lot of different ways that people define adventure, and what we are attempting to do at the travel show this year is to show the best, to show a wide range of adventure vacations that somebody from a teenager through someone who's in their 80s could really take advantage of and learn about.
Would you say that the travel industry has changed a lot in the past few years?
It has. The industry, I think, is most affected these days by the access to information that everybody has. So like a lot of industries, the travel world is now a wide open book. There aren't entities that control information and make it difficult for us to learn. Everybody is sharing. Everybody is posting their vacation pictures and adventures on Facebook, on Pinterest. It's very easy to either brag about where you're going or where you went and to also tempt other people to do the same thing.
That's interesting. So social media is having an impact on adventure travel. How interesting.
So It is. And beyond that, it's so easy to explore wherever you want in the world through easy access, even on your mobile phone, to the depths of Kathmandu or what's interesting in remote parts of Australia. Everyone has access and everyone is sharing. So it's opened up the world and it's gotten us all to travel more, which we're thrilled about.
Are more Americans traveling domestically as opposed to abroad, or are they still, you know, going overseas, even into other continents besides Europe?
By sheer numbers, there still are more trips domestic in the U.S. We're a big road trip culture, and our great country has so much to see and explore, especially with our national parks, that for sheer numbers, we have a huge country. We're traveling more domestically. But international is on the rise again. It had taken a bit of a dip in the recession years. But it's back up. People are traveling more and more abroad. More people are applying for passports than ever before. So it's a really good time for travel.
I noticed on the website that there are a series of conferences. Those conferences, are they addressed to the consumer or to the travel industry people like agents?
We have some of each, Diane.
Oh, good.
We've got a whole day for travel agents and travel industry professionals, where the content and the tone is a little bit different. That's on the Friday of the three-day show. For Saturday and Sunday, we have conferences for consumers, and they are instructional. They're conferences where you can learn on what's new, what's hot in the world of travel, and particularly adventure travel. And we have a ton this year. We have conferences for the consumer besides the adventure conference. We've got a conference on Africa, the Caribbean, medical wellness and spa travel, a new trend. We have a conference session on LGBT travel. We've got one on river cruising. And then an always popular feature is culinary travel. Everyone loves to eat when they're on the road.
Well, and cyclists especially ride to eat. You know, we all ride to eat. So there is
exactly. You have to, and you got to get the energy somewhere. So we'll have a few dozen sessions on our culinary stage. We'll have some stars from the Food Network coming on to demonstrate some great new offerings on the culinary front. We have over 150 countries represented at the travel show this year.
Wow.
The UN only has 165, by the way, so we're getting close. But we've got 150 countries, and a lot of them love to show off their food. We have a stage where we'll have a lot of cooking demonstrations, and better yet, sampling.
Sampling is good. Very, very. I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Michael Carroll. He is with the New York Times. He is the head of travel advertising, which is really just such a cool job, I think. There are a lot of bicycle travel companies, and a consumer can often just book the tour through them, like a Backroads or an Experience Plus or one of those. Are travel agents still a major part of the travel industry?
They're still very important. Their role has changed now that access to information is easier than ever. We see a lot more specialized travel agencies that are really digging into a niche and serving a specific community that might not have existed before. We have great relations with some really specialized companies. We work with Bike Tours Direct. We work with Austin Adventures in Billings. And, of course, the Adventure Cycling Association is important for us. So people we find are both doing their own research and then going to specialized travel agents for that extra amount of insight and tips that you can't find anywhere else.
Got it. Do you have any idea of who will book an adventure travel vacation? What kinds of backgrounds these people might have and ages and whether they're family or individual? I'm just trying to get an idea of who books these adventure travel vacations.
Yeah, it's evolved a lot in the past few years. It's becoming a wider range of both age, background, and other demographic features. We're seeing a wide open access to adventure travel. People are more and more comfortable with it. We think that's mainly because people are sharing more through social media and through every other aspect of their digital lives. So there's a sort of a keeping up with the Joneses effect. You see a friend who's on a safari in Africa facing the zebras, it gives you an idea that maybe I could do that too. So we've seen the adventure travel segment open up a lot, and you know, we're thrilled about that.
Yeah, no kidding. So just a little bit of nitty-gritty on the show. How many exhibitors do you think you'll have? This is at the Javits Center, correct?
It's at the Javits Center here in Manhattan on the west side.
Right.
We have a three-day conference starting February 28th. That's Friday. That's for trade day for travel professionals only. And then we open it up for all consumers on Saturday and Sunday, March 1st and March 2nd. And we will have over 500 exhibitors.
Wow. That's a big number.
It's huge. It's a big number. We're sold out. It's a new record for us. The travel industry is in great shape. And we'll have over 150 countries represented.
I think that's awesome. I just think it's wonderful. And let's hope for good weather.
We haven't specialized in that this winter, but
no, we haven't.
There's always a way. We find a way to make our way to the Javits Center.
Well, Michael, thank you so much for talking with me about the New York Times Adventure Travel Show. They can get online and go to
NYTTravelShow.com. That's NYT as in New York Times, TravelShow.com, or you can just search for it and it'll come up with a great site. Two things I didn't mention, got to throw in there, Diane. We're going to have a climbing wall this year.
Ooh.
And we're having a bungee jump.
Yeah, I'd pass on that, but
you
know, I might
on,
do the
we'll
climbing.
Coach you into it.
Well, thank you
It'll
so much.
It'll be a
much.
Lot of fun. Thanks yeah, for the opportunity.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Have a great show.
Thanks.
All right. Bye-bye. Carolyn and Guy, welcome to The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks for coming into the studio and joining us during Radiothon.
Thanks for having us. Hi, Diane. Happy to be here.
Yeah, and it's not even snowing. Or is it? Is it snowing?
Oh, yeah, it's snowing. But there's bikes parked outside.
Interesting.
There's a really cool old red bike out there.
Don't you take that. It must belong to somebody.
Oh, it's cool.
All right. Tell us a little bit about your work and your website, igotabike.com.
Well, igotabike.com was a natural combination of Guys on Ice talents. I'm a graphic designer. Guy's a recording engineer, and he built the website, and it's just a nice combination of our skills. Good passion.
It's a nice-looking website. There are a lot of sections on it. Do you do different things? Guy, do you do certain things on the website, and Carolyn, you do other things?
The website is, we work on it together, however the creativity comes about. But we do have a division of labor. I'm pretty much the navigator, and Guy is the chief engineer. He works on the mechanics of the bicycles, getting our bicycles set up for touring. So he writes a lot of the gear reviews, and my side is more the navigation, designing maps, the maps and things.
How long have you been doing this?
Just two years.
Yeah, a couple years.
Wow. Because you got a lot done. I mean, there's a lot going on that website. When did you start working on the trail maps for the Ohio to Erie Trail?
Man, we just looked that up. It was like we met someone 2 years ago, and Carol designs a lot of maps for a lot of people. And Carol, you should probably explain the maps because they were all on you.
And they're very nice. And they are. It's a great
set of maps.
All I
did was proofreading.
Well, that was nice of you to do that because proofreading is important, especially with a map.
It is. Thank you, Diane. The maps were, it was just the right time. The Ohio to Erie Trail was founded in 1991. And so over these years, they've been working on building the trail. And it was just time for the map. And then I happened to meet Jerry Rampelt, the executive director, and it was just right time, right place. And we began talking about the maps in the fall of 2011. And then the work got very serious at the end of 2013. That's when I was really designing heavily all day, every day to get these things ready.
What I think was really interesting when I got the maps was that the way you have the sections on each map. So there are four separate sections of the trail, and then each map is divided up into like these small blocks that you could just put onto a handlebar with a click. I mean,
exactly.
The size is really nice. Explain how you do that.
There are four maps, so it's four separate sheets of paper that cover the entire 300-plus mile route. And the decision of where to break the trail, how to divide it up into the panels, and it was designed for handlebar bags, so you could turn to the section that you're riding. It was just common sense. The first thing that we did when I got the opportunity to design the maps was to ride the trail. That's how the whole I Got a Bike thing started. When we were talking about designing the map, I knew it would be a much easier job and a much more fun job if we rode the trail first.
Yeah, no
so
kidding.
So in 2012, sure. Guy and I rode from our front door in Cleveland, Ohio, all the way down to my mom's house in Cincinnati, and then turned around and came back. And when we were on that trip, we started blogging about the tour, and it was so wildly popular. That's how we started the I Got a Bike website. So then over that winter, we decided to write the trail guide because the website was so popular. And then we ended up riding the trail in both directions again in 2013. And then late 2013 was when I was designing the printed maps.
Those maps are on a waterproof paper. They're on like a Tyvek paper, yes?
Technically, no.
Oh, really?
No. But they do have a very nice coating that will make them weather resistant, but they're not weatherproof.
Interesting. So they were really designed for a map case.
Correct.
Opposed to like just a little map clip.
Yes. They come in that plastic envelope that you can use.
True.
And that will protect them. And They have a certain shelf life because the Ohio to Erie Trail is constantly evolving.
Oh, that's interesting.
There will be new sections of trail paved in 2014, so the map will need to be updated as we go forward.
Interesting. So I guess that answers one of my other questions, which is, are there only going to be four maps? So eventually there'll be a fifth map, or will you have to actually revise your existing
maps?
They'll have to
be revised. Wow. As well as our trail guide gets revised. We're going to ride the trail again this year, God willing, and collect information for all the changes and add that to the trail guide and collect information for the maps. We're constantly collecting information.
Do you have both an online system of the maps, or are they just printed?
The maps themselves.
Well,
are
I mean,
just
if somebody.
Printed.
Oh, okay. So, is there the opportunity for GPS in the future, or a way that you're going to be able to download these trips?
The GPS is very accurate, and bike trails are not. So, as I understand it,
oh, that's an interesting perspective I hadn't thought of.
They don't really line up all that well, and you know, I design maps. I love maps. I love a compass. And when I'm out on a bike tour, I want a little break from all the technology. I want to enjoy the countryside and the corn and the soybeans and the cows. I don't want to be married to some gizmo that's in my hand. Although most everyone we meet on the bike tour has a smartphone, and that's why we designed our trail guide for mobile applications.
So explain the trail guide.
The trail guide is it's not really an app, and it's not really a book. It's a 69-page PDF that you can download to your smartphone, your tablet, et cetera, et cetera. And it is got maps. It's got pictures that are annotated. Carol did a great job, like, writing on the pictures. Turn here, turn there. Because a lot of the turns are, you know, or places along the trail are difficult if it's your first time through. The trail guide has where to stay, where to sleep, where to get food, where to find beer. Important.
Yep. Very important
to all bicyclists.
Food and beer. It doesn't get better
than
that.
And any place that we've been to and that we enjoyed is marked in red. That list is always constantly evolving so that you're not going off into the wilderness blind. You can, you know, because it's, you know, if you've never been touring before, it's daunting. But the whole idea of igotabike.com is that anybody can do it. Strap stuff to a bicycle, get on it, and ride. It's not that technical. It's a bicycle. We've been doing it since we were five, right?
That's very true. How is this project being financed? You're not doing this only out of the goodness of your heart, yes? No?
Igotabike.com is ours, and the trail maps have been funded by the Ohio to Erie Trail Fund.
Got it.
And the trail guide is for sale. The trail guide is an interactive document. It's not linear. You can touch the city that you're interested in, and then that will bring you to the information to that particular place. You can purchase it on igotabike.com.
Got it.
The trail maps are free. You just have to pay the shipping and handling, and those are also available at igotabike or from ohiotoerietrail.org.
Wow, you just answered my last two questions. I mean, like, you just ran me out of... No, not really. This year, you're going to be looking for changes in the trail and updating the maps.
We know that changes are coming.
Okay.
Even with the current printed maps, we had late-breaking changes. They were doing ribbon-cutting ceremonies in November, and we were going on press in December.
Right.
And we were changing the maps to update to the new sections.
I know your press people were really excited about that. I guess my last question has to do with why you decided to do this. What is it that is so compelling about bicycle travel for you, bicycle touring in Ohio? I mean, and I've lived here my whole life. I mean, I wasn't born here, but I've lived here my whole life. And I think we have an amazing state and that people would like this. Why do you think it's so compelling?
I was thinking about this very thing this morning. We are huge fans of traveling, but we don't have a lot of money. And this is a great, wonderful state, like you just said. And we are wearing this state out, I am telling you what. And riding on a bicycle is a great way because you go through it, not over it, not past it. You are part of it. And it started, I don't know, I used to be a backpacker. and I broke my leg some years back, and well, that kind of put the kibosh on backpacking. But right. This is backpacking with a steel mule. I don't have to carry this stuff.
Well, that is true.
So that's just icing on the cake for me.
All right. Well, it's Carolyn and Guy. Pronounce your last name for me.
Cacharel.
Cacharel.
Carol uses her maiden name Lewis professionally.
Well, that's
because Cacharel, Cacciale, is professional suicide.
Well, igotabike.com is the website. The Ohio to Erie Trail Guide, the Ohio to Erie Trail Maps. They're a nice set of maps. As I said, they are free except for shipping. You can get them online at igotabike.com or at the ohioerietrail.org.
Ohio to Erie Trail.
Okay. Thanks so much for coming into the studio. I'm sorry we can hardly see each other in the dark here, but I hope you have a great rest of your winter, and let's hope we can get on the bike soon.
Great. Thanks,
Diane. Thanks for having
us. Thank you. Have a great afternoon. Bye-bye. Guy and Carolyn Cacharel joined us right here in the studio. We don't always have guests in the studio. That was kind of fun.
Yeah, it's always nice to have extras here.
Yeah, but we're going to take a break on the Outspoken Cyclist. We'll be right back to talk to you a little bit about Radiothon, and we'll give you some news.
WJCU, University Heights, from the campus of John Carroll University.
WJCU needs you during Radiothon 2014.
WJCU provides commercial-free content 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
We need your support
to thrive and survive.
No subscriptions, no spam, no spin. Just people who are passionate about bringing you entertainment you won't find anywhere else.
But we only ask for your help just once each year. Every dollar we receive from Radiothon goes right back into keeping us on the air and on the web.
Keep it coming by pledging your support.
Call now or pledge online.
We are back on the Outspoken Cyclist. I'm Diane Lees.
And I'm Tim McKenna.
And as I said, it is Radiothon. Remember, Radiothon 2014, Thrive and Survive. If you have not made your pledge to the Outspoken Cyclist and WJCU, please, please, please consider doing so. It's WJCU.org, or you can call 216-397-4438. Remember, we only come to you once a year for 1 week to get you to give us a little bit of your money so that we can stay on the air with state-of-the-art equipment and great programming. So that's all I'm going to say about it. Just please do so. Thanks. So as I noted at the beginning of the show, there's a lot of news this week and not a whole lot of time. We've been following the cases of Steve Wartenberg, the popular blogger from Columbus Dispatch, who was hit last fall, as well as the case of Bob Lennon, the teacher who was killed by a hit-and-run driver. This week, Bob's sister has asked a favor through Steve Wartenberg's blog, and we are reporting on it now. I will tell you that after sentencing on February 24th, we are going to have the prosecutor on the show to talk to us about how the sentencing went and why. This is what Steve Wartenberg said in his blog this week. I heard from Beth Kraft, the sister of Bob Lennon, the cyclist who was struck and killed by a hit-and-skip driver on September 15th in Delaware County. Sentencing for Mary Katie Paul is set for February 24th in Delaware County Common Pleas Court, and the family has a request. I'll let Beth explain. She says, on February 24th, Katie Paul will be sentenced for what she did to Bob. I have a favor to ask you that might help out Bob's case and should help out the entire cycling community. Another friend of mine who is an attorney said that one of the things ordinary citizens can do is convey to the judge their thoughts, feelings, and above all, recommendations for sentencing. One of the ways to do this is to submit a letter, or in legal jargon, a written victim impact statement to the judge. Mark Weiner with the Licking County Prosecutor's Office is collecting these letters to present at sentencing. His email is mweiner, W-E-I-N-E-R, at lcounty.com. Letters can be sent to his address, Mark Weiner, Licking County Prosecutor's Office, 155 East Main Street, Newark, Ohio, 43055. Mark has indicated that it is very important to have victim impact statements. The prosecutor who will be presenting the letters has asked that letters be written well in advance of the sentencing. The letters my friends have written include requesting maximum sentencing, not just because Bob was a good person and was left to die by a person who has shown no remorse and continually lied about it, but also because the laws need to be changed for cyclists. Cycling is becoming popular in Columbus and all across the country. It is a good way to exercise and release stress, as you know. For any cyclist who is hit by a driver and leaves the scene, these letters should be sent. It is important for the cycling community to know. So I thought that that was something I wanted to convey. It works across the country. Anybody can write these victim impact statement letters to the judge. We will report on the sentencing after the 24th.
I think the other important thing about this is we need to know as a cyclist what to do. And so many times we read about these cases and no one shows up, no one supports, and the judge rules with the minimum so many times.
That is right.
They don't understand the impact.
You're absolutely right. What's your first piece of news there, Mr. Tim?
Well, keeping on the same topic, in the Arizona State Legislature, there are three cycling-related bills that have been introduced. So if you go to TucsonVelo.com, and if you're in Arizona, make sure that you go ahead and put your input on this. One is a texting ban for all drivers.
Oh, good.
The others have to do with minimum distance and giving way for a cyclist. And the third one, it actually has to do with allowing a driver to cross over a double yellow. That way they can actually give the rider distance when they need to at some point in time. So another state that we see that's doing things much better. And if you're in Arizona, TucsonVelo.com, and you can get the information from there.
Awesome. Awesome. So do you know this is February, so it's Black History Month?
Yes.
Well, how about Black History in bike history? There was a 25th Infantry Bicycle Corps that was evidently an African-American bicycle corps back in 1866. This is a woman named Louise McGrody, and she published this. It's from the Bicycle Alliance of Washington State. She published it online this week. We've been searching for a story about African-American contributors to bicycling and found the story in her Bike Love, Bicycle Travel. In my mind, the 25th Infantry Bicycle Corps are trailblazers of bike touring. In 1866, Congress created the first peacetime all-black army regiments, the Buffalo Soldiers. There were four regiments in all, and members of the 25th Infantry stationed at Fort Missoula became the Bicycle Corps. Bicycling caught the eye of the U.S. military in the late 1800s. In 1896, Fort Missoula's Lieutenant James Moss, a white officer, African-American regiments were historically commanded by white officers, was granted permission to establish a Bicycle Corps with soldiers from the 25th Infantry. Their job was to test the bicycle for possible military applications. It's a long article. It's very interesting. So again, it is about Black History in Bike History by Louise McGrody, and it was published on the Bicycle Alliance of Washington State's website. Interesting, huh?
I think that's really neat. And obviously, they didn't have to worry about a lot of vehicles on the road at the time.
Yeah, but we know if any two vehicles are on the road, they'll smack into one another.
Exactly.
So. What else you got?
If you are in Minneapolis, Minnesota, or would like to move there, our friends at Shinola are looking for a sales associate and bike specialist. They've
Seriously?
Got a job opening. So if you just simply go to shinola.com careers, and you can get the information from there.
Well, an American company looking for American workers, that's always a good thing. But in Minnesota, that's interesting. I always thought everything they did was out of Detroit, as we say.
They have a lot in Detroit, but they're growing.
Evidently, they are. My last item for this week is about another story. You remember the gentleman, Anders Swanson, who was chased by the teenagers, and then
Yes.
suddenly the teenagers decided to try and turn the tables on him. Well, David Cook has been reporting on it, and finally Marion County, Tennessee officials decided to charge two local teenagers with acts of delinquency. Woohoo! On January 11th, Anders Swanson was training on the Raccoon Mountain Reservoir when teenagers buzzed, air-horned, and pepper-sprayed him. The assault was not only a specific act of aggression here in this growing outdoor city, but a lightning rod of outrage for cyclists across the Americas who have experienced similar car-to-bike violence. That's why the changes matter so much. The 14-year-old was charged with possession of an unreasonably loud horn. The 16-year-old was charged with misdemeanor assault, he with the pepper spray, and perhaps more notably, violating the 3-foot law. State law requires all cars, this is the most important thing, state law requires all cars give at least 3 feet of clearance when passing a cyclist. Marion County's decision to charge the teen with violating this law is groundbreaking, as it sends a message to all drivers that law enforcement can and will take the 3-foot violation seriously. So it goes on. It's a fairly long article, and it explains everything that's happened, but it looks like Anders Swanson obviously will be vindicated for these kids chasing him down and harassing him. And really, remember, he had asthma, and he got sprayed in the face with pepper spray.
Well, and that's why it's so important, and that's why we mention what's going on in Arizona. If they don't have the law in place, there isn't anything that we can do to those in the vehicles.
Exactly. Exactly, as we say. You got one more real short one?
I got two real short ones, and
okay,
this is
go.
A fun one from, let's go with an Olympic theme. The Finnish hockey team rode their bikes from the Olympic Village to the first game that they played.
And how interesting.
It was 61 degrees there, and instead of taking the bus, they decided that they would all ride together. It was a very short ride, and they did win the game. I thought it was interesting that they all rode together.
Winter Olympics in 61 degrees somehow seemed diametrically opposed to one another, but whatever.
Well, and it was neat. A lot of the guys hadn't ridden their bikes to the game since they were little kids, so it was a neat thing. And just one last quick thing. For those of you that might be going to South by Southwest in Austin, there's a hashtag, Use Me, Leave Me. It shares houses and bicycles for attendees. So if you want a bike and you want to ride from place to place, and apparently that's the quick way to get around instead of taking a taxi or taking a bus, hashtag Use Me, Leave Me. It sounds like a country and western.
Yeah.
Well, it is Austin. So
it is Austin.
Okay.
All right.
That's it for the news.
That's all our news. We are going to head out to the Netherlands. Yes, indeed. I'm excited. We're going to talk with Peter Voss about Tulip Cycling. Peter, thanks for joining us on the Outspoken Cyclist today.
Okay, thanks for the invitation.
It's really fun to talk to somebody from the Netherlands. We talk a lot about the Netherlands and cycling on the show. Tell us a little bit about yourself and how you became the owner of a touring company, of all things.
It's a strange story, I think. From origin, as a young guy, I was interested in maps. Yeah, so what I did was, when I was a little guy of 10 years old, and then when we went on holiday, I was sitting next to my father, and I told him how to drive to southern France or wherever we went. So that was always my interest. And I had something I want to study, something with maps. So and by that, when I finished my high school, I decided I want to do land surveying. So I did the university land surveying. And by that time, I became land surveying. And so my profession has been mapping. And in the time I worked in the land surveying, I loved it. And I really appreciated it. But after 20 years working in that business, I was looking, I want to do something for myself. I want to do something with my passion. I was going out of my passion, that is surveying, how you became a manager and things like that. And I always liked biking. I have always been biking myself, and not only in Holland, but all over the world. And I was looking for, can I combine maybe my passion for maps, routing, and maybe the tourism. I like the tourism and I like the biking. And I was looking for that. And I have been looking several years to find something in that. And then at once, I saw a company which was Tulip Cycling. It was an owner, already existing company, and he wanted to get rid of it. And then I said to my wife, that's what I want. So I talked to them, and we had half a year talking about how I could buy the company. So that's how it happened 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago.
So you started out as a land surveyor, you love maps, and then you said, let's just combine this with my love of cycling. What a great idea. So you've had Tulip Cycling for 3 years. It's just you and your wife?
Yeah, it's me and my wife, and we have some help around. So some people, they want guided tours. You can't do guiding and do all the starts and finishes and do the office work. So I use a lot of guides, really travel guides, and I also have some help, some retired persons helping me with some small business. But about 70% of all business is just me and myself, because my wife is also a teacher at the university.
Ah.
So she's doing some work, but most is me.
Nice.
It's really my company. Yeah.
One of the things that intrigued me about your company was your Tulip Cycling Navigation System. Would you explain how that works? I think that's a really good idea. I watched your video.
Mm-hmm. Good. Yeah, you have to know from the land surveying, you know, when you are a land surveyor, GPS, when GPS system came, it was a military system, but the second part of it was land surveying. So, and I have been 10 years professional GPS user, so for land surveying, and that's a real different kind when you use a GPS system in your car or on a bike, whatever. So the first thing I knew, when you have maps, I can read maps because it's my passion, but a lot of people, they can't. They quarrel about maps and they put it upside down and they look and they get lost. Some people use cue sheets, but when one tree is missing and you have to go by the third tree to the left and the tree is missing, you go wrong and you're lost. So all that kind of navigation system don't work. And so I knew from my profession, GPS is perfect, also on a bike. So what I did, we have very simple Garmin GPS receivers, and I really tried a lot. I invented a lot in that. So how can you make them as simple as possible? So, and we make them, I could almost say, so simple that I can tell someone in 15 minutes when I meet you in the field, in 15 minutes, you're a profi user of my system and you can bike with it and you never get lost and you can follow the route. And Christine can confirm that, I think.
Can you confirm that?
I can.
Okay. So for our listeners, one of Tulip Cycling's guests, they are also friends of mine, is here. She wanted to see how we did this at the studio. So hi, Chris.
Hi, Diane.
Then so Peter hasn't seen Chris, but he's going to see her this summer. They're going back over. Okay. Well,
Fourth time already.
Oh, fourth time. That's really cool. Well, if somebody brings his own bike, do you allow them to take one of the Garmins with them?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, it doesn't matter. Okay.
Yeah, and you also have a map and you have the GPS. It's a combination. You have the map for orientation and the GPS is telling you where to go every time.
Right. It's really cool. And at the end of our conversation, I'll tell people how to get online and they can see the video. It's very, very clever. So let's say Chris and her husband Gary are coming over and they're going to rent bikes and they're going to get the navigation system. Yeah. What happens if there's a breakdown? Do you have SAG service, technical assistance?
Yes. It's very important, of course, that when people come to bike, they are on holiday. And sure, someone can repair a flat tire, but some people can't. On the other hand, you can have major problems. And some days it's the Sunday, shops are not open, so you can't go in a bicycle repair shop. So you need something different than that. And we are very lucky in Holland, because in Holland everyone's biking. So that means there are companies in Holland and their profession is just like for cars, that you have, they have a service, assistance service for the whole country. And you give a call to them when you have a problem, you tell where you are. And a man by car is coming, and the car is a mobile bike repair shop.
Nice.
So he comes to you, and hey, your bike's going in, and he looks and he repairs it. And when he can't repair it, it's possible. Huh? He gets a new bike or whatever. So there's always a solution, I tell, when you have a problem. You have to know, each year, it's only used 3 or 4 times a year. So it means it's almost not necessary. The equipment is so well, good. So, and the circumstances in Holland for biking are very well. So, it's there, but it's not really necessary at all.
And that's a good thing. I like that. So, one of the other things that you do that you don't often see on bike travel companies is the whole array of gear you have for kids, everything from little trailers to trailer bikes to small bicycles. So you are encouraging families to come, yes?
Holland is, of course, it's a good country for biking, not only because people think it's flat, but most important is we have a bike culture. And so that means every kid from 4 years on in Holland can bike. There is no kid who can't bike. That's impossible. So I mean, why shouldn't you share this with your tourists from other countries? Because people, a lot of time, they think, oh, we have kids, we can't do tours like this. That's not true. I mean, I have three kids myself, and when our daughter was 1 year old, we made already a bike tour with her. Yeah, a holiday in a trailer. That's so. I want to show people that biking is not just for adults or for grown-up people, but it's for families. It's for everyone. You can bike, and it's fun to do. So that's why we have the whole equipment for from people from 80 till people from 1 year old.
Nice.
You just have to stick. That's the only the thing that's important for them.
So I want to remind our listeners, we're speaking with Peter Voss. He is the owner of Tulip Cycling in Holland. And one of the things I want to talk about is your website shows five really interesting themes. And I especially liked one of them. I was somewhat unaware that Holland, the Netherlands, what you guys went through during World War II. Tell us a little bit about your World War II reflection tour, and then we'll talk about some of the other themes you offer.
Okay. It's important to know, you talk about a World War II tour, but that's not correct. We have, I made five teams to encourage people from, okay, what do you want to see? Where are your interests? It means it's not a tour. It's a kind of an interest. So what we do, we make tailor-made tours, so everything is possible. So you can make every tour you want, but when you say, okay, I want to combine teams, it's also possible. But you, when you say, we talk about World War II, it can be three different or four different tours. But okay, I will tell you something about World War II. In Holland in 1940, the German, they came in and well, we have been 5 years down under the Germans till 45. Then we, 5th of May, we have a free country again. But in the 5 years, there was not so much happening. Yeah, I mean, sure, there was war everywhere. Yeah, I mean, you have the city of Rotterdam was totally bombed in 1940, and then war started really. But in that period, there was not happening so much, but a very important period was in September 1944, so almost at the end of the war. Then you have D-Day, where the Canadian, the English people, the US people, and they came in France. They land in Normandy, and by that time they went over to the north, to Holland, to freedom. But the problem was they could not they couldn't get the bridge in Arnhem. It's a very important city in World War II. They could not get the bridge. And in that time, by that bridge, there were a lot of fights, and that was really awful. And maybe it's not nice, but interesting is my dad lives, he's coming from that area, and he was a kid of 7 years old, for example, and they had to go. So the whole village where he lived, they just had to move. So they took some stuff. When you look at Syria, and you go out of your house and you go somewhere. And that's what they also did in that time. And when they came back after we were a free country again, there was nothing left. The house was gone. All was gone. So they had to start a new life. So in that period, in the Arnhem region, there were a lot of fights, a lot of people from England, from Canada, they didn't survive that time. There are a lot of war cemeteries, there are a lot of museums around, a lot of memorials. So when you cycle in that area, you feel the history, and when you are aware of it. And a lot of people are interested in that.
Oh, I think it was fascinating, the photographs on your site and just the description. So you have different times of the year that seem to be highlighted, like there's a flower tour. I assume that only happens at a certain time of the year?
Yeah, that's correct. The flowers are just depending a bit on the winter and spring, but April till half of May, and then it's gone.
Ah, so yeah. that would be the time to come. So what's the average temperature in Holland?
Okay, now we get the problems from Fahrenheit and Celsius. Yes, I don't know the conversion.
That's okay. You can say it in Celsius. I mean, okay. I can speak in millimeters and centimeters.
Okay, perfect. Okay, so when you look at Holland, we do bike tours from end of March till end of October.
Okay.
In that period, you talk about 10 to 25 degrees Celsius.
Okay. So for all you Americans, go look it up. You can find it on the internet if you can't. 10 degrees from 10 to 10 to 25 Celsius.
It's not freezing.
No, it's not. It's not too cold to ride. That is the point.
Just so in April, October, it can be chilly in the mornings. You need gloves for that time, just in the mornings.
Nothing wrong with gloves and arm warmers and leg warmers. That's fine. The Netherlands are always what we refer to as the bicycle culture. I mean, when people talk about emulating something about cycling, it's about the Netherlands. Why do you think your country has developed such a strong cycling culture?
I think there are some reasons. So there's not one reason. One, the country is almost flat. Yeah. So that means, when you have a hilly country, people don't like to bike generally, especially when biking started, you didn't have gears, things like that. So, I mean, in those countries, biking didn't start, of course, because people were not able to bike at all.
Right.
So it's flat. That's one important reason. Second, we were early developed the country. So it means that we had our historical cities, they're from the 1600s, the Golden Age. I mean, those cities, when you look at them, the streets are very small. There were no cars in that time. People walked around and there was maybe a horse or whatever with a car behind. So it's just very small, narrow streets. So when you look at the US, big streets, very large, good for cars. By us, downtown, it's very difficult to drive by car because there is no room. So that's the second reason. I think third reason why you have a lot of bikes here is because we are very highly densely populated in Holland. And when everyone should have a car, you're just in one big traffic jam. So people start biking because the villages are very, very close. It's all you can reach by bike. So why should you take it? When the cars came, people didn't move to a car because it's you're quicker by bike than car in the city downtown. That's proven always. So, and people, I think the Dutch like to travel, and I think biking is a way of traveling. I think those combinations of those things together makes that we really have a bike culture.
I agree. That's really interesting, all of it. Well, let's let our listeners know how to find out about Tulip Cycling. You are booking tours now, I take it. Well, obviously, because Chris and Gary already have booked their tour for this year. So give us the website, and then we will let you get back to what you're doing. I know it's late over there.
No, it's not late. It's 6 o'clock.
Oh, so, not too bad. Okay.
Yeah, it's just getting dark by now. Okay, tulipcycling.com, www.tulipcycling.com, that's the website. And there you find all information you need for a bike tour in Holland. And what you see, there's a lot of freedom in our concept. I mean, most people, they contact us first. Okay, we have an idea, we want to bike in Holland, but we don't know what and how. And then we try to help. I really like to help people individually basis, and so not standard tours with hundreds of people doing the same tour. That's not what I like. That's not my passion. I like to make every route unique.
Well, you know what? That sounds like fun. So you can do, obviously, Chris and Gary are just two people. Do you also do larger groups? Just out of curiosity. Okay. So anybody could come. And obviously children are welcome. It's just awesome.
Yeah. Everyone can come. Big, small groups. Doesn't matter. But what I want is personal attention. That's what I like. And so it means I always meet people at the start. I explain them the GPS system. I explain the bikes. And they can ask anything about Holland. I lived my whole life here. I worked everywhere. I lived everywhere. So I know my friends always say people know every street in Holland. It's not true, of course, but I know a lot of them.
Well, Peter, thank you so much for talking with me about Tulip Cycling. It makes me want to come take a tour, and maybe someday I will. Thank you so much.
Okay, thanks a lot.
And have a wonderful cycling season.
Okay, thanks a lot.
All right.
And you're welcome to see once our beautiful country for cycling.
I would love it. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay. Perfect. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Peter Vos joined me from his home in the Netherlands. Makes me want to take a cycling tour in Holland. I wanted to go anyway because it's flat, remember? But it really does look like fun. It's tulipcycling.com. One more push for Radiothon. This is our last request. We will close the database on Tuesday at noon. Please consider pledging your support by getting online at wjcu.org and clicking the Pledge Online button up on the top right, or give me a call at 216-397-4438. We'll be here for a few more minutes for this week's Outspoken Cyclist. Thank you so much for joining me. Hope you liked our little travel and adventure show, and we'll be back next week with another great episode of The Outspoken Cyclist. Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us today on The Outspoken Cyclist with Diane Lees. We'll be back next Saturday evening from 5:30 to 6:30 here on WJCU 88.7 FM and streaming live on the internet at wjcu.org. Don't forget, this show is available as a downloadable podcast also at wjcu.org, and we're on Facebook at The Outspoken Cyclist. Thanks again for listening, ride safely, and we'll see you next week.